The views and opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of WEFT-FM, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. And now here is this week's edition of IMC Radio News.
Why do we produce the IMC Radio News?
Because the chasm isn't left to right. It's top to bottom.
To give voice to people who aren't heard.
To bust up the myth of objective journalism.
Bill O'Reilly does not have a monopoly on the truth.
To build our community and re-educate the public.
To revive the voice of organized labor.
To bring forth debate so as to animate democracy.
Because I want to agitate for revolution.
Listen to the voices of your community on IMC Radio News.
Welcome to IMC Radio News. On June 19th at the National Campus Community Radio Conference Standard Award Dinner in Winnipeg, Canada, keynote speaker Jagjit Singh spoke on grassroots resistance and community activism. We'll start off this edition of IMC Radio News with a segment of that talk.
First of all, I want to thank the organizers of this conference for inviting me. I'm not used to these kind of settings. I'm used to speaking to partisan crowds or debating opponents. I'm not used to speaking at banquets, but anyways, I'll do my best. First of all, I feel really privileged to be here and be able to address folks who are involved with campus and community radio across Canada. It's something I've been lucky enough to be part of a little bit. As some of you might know, community radio stations across the country end up becoming hangouts for activists, you know, your couches and what have you, hotbeds of dissent. And I've been lucky enough to be able to sleep out at various couches at CKUT, CKLN, etc. across the country. I suppose I'm invited here as an activist and organizer, someone who's been involved in various causes such as, you know, the Quebec City protest or Palestinian solidarity organizing. But as part of all these efforts, I've been also just as much a community media worker like many of you. I've been involved in independent and alternative media, mainly in print, but also in radio. And I think there's a connection to talk about between radical social justice organizing, radical social justice activism, and indie media. I actually think the link is kind of seamless. And for me, being an activist is just as much being a community media worker, and I think being a community media worker is just as much being an activist. That point was really made for me today when I read the National Post, the National Compost. I read this op-ed by Jonathan Kay, who's their editorials page editor. He's a right-winger. And this summer, he set up something called CBC Watch, because he's angry about CBC's coverage, particularly on the Middle East, because CBC is trying to be fair in its coverage of the Middle East, and that really angers people like Jonathan Kay. For example, they refer to Palestinian militants, not terrorists, or they number the deaths of everyone who dies, not just the Israelis. So, like the BBC, CBC is being unfair. So there's been this full-scale attack on the CBC, because they decide every once in a while to air a Palestinian voice, or they don't totally apologize for the Israeli occupation. But there was one quote Jonathan Kay made during in his column that I found really interesting. This was in today's paper. He said, "This is supposed to be our national broadcaster, not a left-wing college radio station." That's what he said about CBC. And you can tell that Jonathan Kay and I are at opposite ends of the political spectrum, because what he considers an insult, I consider a compliment. Because CBC is attempting to provide some balanced coverage. I think a lot of us would argue that it's not balanced enough. But it's accused of being like a campus radio station because it's trying to provide balanced coverage. I think there's a really good lesson there. I think community radio and social justice activism share a lot of the same premises. We share a lot of the same premises about the nature of our society. We have an analysis that goes beyond thinking that stuff just happens, you know, like good things happen, bad things happen, and if we're lucky, we'll get a photo or, you know, whatever. No, stuff just doesn't happen. There are entrenched power interests in society. There are reasons for particular decisions. There's historical background that informs our current reality. Now, it would be totally patronizing of me to talk to a group of community radio journalists and, you know, talk to you or preach to you about, you know, the nature of the mainstream media. I think most of you, you know about it. There have been workshops about it, about media concentration, about media monopolies, about the superficial nature of the media. I mean, the coverage of the Iraq war is just one example. There was unprecedented coverage. You know, you had embedded journalists, or in-bed journalists, depending on how you look at it, 24/7 coverage of the war, video phones, you know, on-the-spot coverage, and yet amazingly, all this money was being spent, and you could still, you know, the coverage was still so superficial, and you weren't informed. We could talk about how the superficiality borders on the criminal, how news is essentially a product, etc., etc. But like I said, that would be a bit patronizing to a group like you. Instead, I want to look at social justice organizing, as a looking glass or a mirror on community radio of the last 5 to 7 years or so. And when I talk about social justice organizing, I'm referring to a specific kind, the kind that's been associated with radical protesters at Seattle or Quebec City, people engaged in direct action, confronting various manifestations of the so-called corporate agenda. These moments in Seattle and Quebec City have been sort of the announcement to the world of a movement that exists. A movement because, you know, on the one hand, you know, we're not isolated anymore. There are large groups of people coming together with a shared perspective. And a movement because, you know, very simply put, the cops say so. And they're, you know, they're targeting these protests and what have you. I guess one announcement of this movement, this social justice movement, was back in November of 1999 in Seattle, where thousands took the streets against what then was a really esoteric institution called the WTO. At exactly the same time this was emerging, you had the emergence of indie media. I wasn't in Seattle at the time, I was in India, sitting in an internet cafe, blown away by the coverage. Blown away, one, because of what was happening, and secondly, because I could hear these reports on the spot, not through CNN or MSNBC or any other media conglomerate, but because of independent media networks, because of community radio. And of course, this goes back further, a lot further, but just sort of limiting ourselves to the last couple of years. In 1998, I remember being at an activist gathering in Toronto, something called Active Resistance, organized by those anarchists. And people talking then about a direct action media network, about news wires, about micro radio, about pirate radio, all the elements that went into these independent media networks. We can go back even further. You know, 1999 is sort of the announcement to the West, North America, of an anti-globalization movement. But back in 1994, January 1st to be specific, there was another announcement to the world when Mayan Indians and Chiapas took up arms and fought back against NAFTA. This announced a whole new activism. This announced a new activism that was very aware of the importance of community radio, of community organizing, of alternative media. And the movement has flourished ever since. There are a few attributes, I think, that are important to keep in mind. This just isn't a movement, you know, emerging out of nothing. It has an analysis, it shares some organizing styles, and it has certain strategies and tactics. Again, the analysis isn't about saying, you know, we're for good things and we're against bad things. Which is sort of a superficial media analysis you get in the mainstream. Rather, it's talking about, you know, what exactly makes up power? What is that power? And calling that power, calling it for what it is, capitalism or imperialism or colonialism, and not being afraid of that. And that's what a lot of this movement's been about. In terms of organizing, it's about organizing based on values that we hold dear, organizing in ways that we want to see the world be, direct democracy, participatory democracy. And in terms of strategy and tactics, very basically, confronting power and not accommodating ourselves to it. The premise of this organizing, this social justice organizing that we've seen in Quebec City and Genoa, that we've seen a lot of in the anti-war movement that brought people to the streets in the hundreds of thousands, the premise is that you can be radical and you can be effective, you can be militant and you can be creative. These things are considered trade-offs, things that you can't bring together, but you can bring them together. And I'm going to return to that because I think it applies to the way we might want to look at community radio. So much of this has become normal, indie media, etc., that we just take it for granted. For example, just to give one example, I was in Ottawa recently after a SWAT team attack on non-status Algerians, people who don't have status in this country, who are fighting for the right to stay. It's part of the campaign, one of the things that our campaign is working for called No One Is Illegal. This was beyond the glare of the media. But what we managed to do was get live reports on CKUT Radio in Montreal about what had happened. We went right to the source. We went live to air. You know, CNN and all the other major broadcasters brag about how they go live to air. Well, you know, we can go live to air too and get the story out. And that's exactly what we were doing. Posting photos of the brutality that the SWAT team undertook. And basically beat the mainstream at their own game. Beat CBC, Ottawa Citizen, to this story. Again, things that now we just take for granted. But I mean, when we reflect on it and step back a second, you know, this is really important. This is a really important development. What we see is that community radio, community media has developed hand in hand with this social justice movement. And we shouldn't be afraid of that. When Jonathan Kay says, well, left-wing campus radio, we should take it as a compliment. I want to give some examples of this development hand-in-hand, of this practice of solidarity, which is what I think community radio should be all about. I want to give three examples. The first is Gracineros, which is only 3 hours away from Winnipeg, but it might as well be a continent away because of different perceptions about what's happening. Well, Gracineros is an indigenous community in northwestern Ontario. It's one of those frontline struggles in our country, in this state, against genocide and against colonialism. And I had a real privilege to visit this community that's fighting back against clear-cutting of their lands. I went with other activists here in Winnipeg. And, you know, what do we as activists do when we go to this kind of community? Well, we bring our mini-discs, we bring our notebooks, we bring our cameras, we bring our eyes and ears. We're there to see and listen, to think and to act. It's the practice of alternative journalism. We learned about the legacy of residential schools, about the mercury poisoning of the watershed. I mean, this was a community where literally every person over 40 was dying of some disease that was preventable because of various corporate behaviors. We learned about relocation of community and the fighting back against these clear cuts. I use that word solidarity. You know, what is the role of us as activists or journalists? The work is there. The work is to provide a voice to this struggle, this amazing struggle, but again, exists just 3 hours away from here and is on the front lines of confronting some of these systems of power. To give another example, I worked with a group called the International Solidarity Movement, which is a Palestinian-led group made up of Palestinians internationals that tries to confront the Israeli occupation of Palestine through nonviolent direct action. And the work of ISM is all about community media work. Community media work, not so much in Palestine, but getting the story out here. You know, I was refused entry into Israel, and they said I was a security threat. I ended up staying for a bit until I was eventually deported. But, you know, what did I actually do there? What I did was community media work. Filing stories for ZNet or for Rabble, radio reports that ran on CKUT or CKLN, etc. I remember well one show that we did on the radio, a live show on Christmas in Bethlehem, making links. I was there in Bethlehem talking to Palestinians, and in the studio at CKUT in Montreal were homeless rights activists talking about the homelessness situation in Montreal. I think that's the power of what we can do. Now, that kind of activism, that kind of community media work, and as I said, they're wanting the same for me, is under attack. It's under attack with the ISM. For example, you have the murder of Rachel Corrie, a 23-year-old American, who was there as a witness to the situation, writing articles, writing letters. Or Brian Avery, another activist from Britain, whose face was essentially shot off as he was trying to take photographs of what was happening there. Of course, this happens to Palestinians in the dozens, but I cite those examples just to give an idea of what this movement is all about and what the power of community media is all about. The third example I want to use is something that I'm here to promote. I'm not just here to give the keynote. It's a project that's developing in Guerrero in southern Mexico called Radio Libertad. Southern Mexico is one of those front lines as well. I mean, front lines are everywhere in the struggle against colonialism, struggle against oppression. But one of those front lines, especially in the context of NAFTA and the FTAA, is in southern Mexico, where there's a project called Plan Pueblo Panama, PPP, Plan Pueblo Panama, which is essentially what I call capitalism's great leap forward in southern Mexico. They want to build dams, they want to clear cut the forest, they want to, you know, make this area of the world, Chiapas, Oaxaca, Guerrero, safe for the free market and safe for democracy. One of the needs and one of the demands made by indigenous rights activists on the front lines there is community radio, is a way to communicate their struggle with each other. Something very basic, and I think something we have to remind ourselves of from the privileges that we come from. I mean, I know that you know, community radio and campus radio face a lot of challenges in terms of funding, etc., etc. But let's remember those origins, that basic origin of wanting to communicate within a community. And here on the front line in Guerrero, where you have a low-intensity war, here on the front line where people who try to engage in community radio activism are often shot and killed, two activists involved with this project were murdered in April of this year. I mean, that reminds us of what this is all about. And what we have with Radio Libertad is an alliance of activists and community radio organizers in Montreal, with CKUT and the Radio Centre Ville, another community radio station. And again, it's seamless, this, being an activist, being a community radio organizer, it's seamless. Linking up with three radio activists in Mexico City who discovered the power of micro radio and free radio. linking with these indigenous groups in Guerrero. There's no legislation in Mexico for community radio, but there is the constitutional right for indigenous peoples for autonomous communication systems. And that's exactly what they're trying to develop with their transmitters, et cetera, developing this this radio project in Guerrero, something I encourage people to get familiar with. Just three examples of this seamless link, as I said, between social justice organizing and community media and community radio. I think community radio is a microcosm of all those things that social justice organizers are fighting for when we take the streets in Seattle or Quebec City. I talked about the analysis, the organizing, the strategy and tactics. Well, as people involved in community radio, we develop our analysis, our organizing, our strategy and tactics. Analysis and organizing, strategy and tactics that challenges power, that reflects alternative values, that challenges oppression in all its kinds, in the way that we organize, in what we cover. And you know, I was looking at some of the awards that are going to be given out later, and you know, it's no mistake that you have CKUT getting an award for their homeless marathon. You know, that very real choice to give voice to a certain issue. Or Co-op Radio's Red Eye program that I'm familiar with in Vancouver, which every week is doing that, giving voice to the struggles of the oppressed. You know, I'm involved with a group called the Anti-Capitalist Convergence, not the Anti-Capitalist Consortium, although that'd be a good rock band name. Anyways, the Anti-Capitalist Convergence, and you know, those of us who are part of anti-capitalist struggles or anti-globalization movement, we're always asked, what's your alternative? What's your alternative? What are you for? And there's a lot of things that we're for. A lot of alternative projects, a lot of alternative visions. I think one of those alternatives is community radio. And I'm not naive. I'm aware of all the internal struggles and power dynamics and hierarchies and things. But I think community radio stations, at least the ones I'm familiar with, are microcosms of that alternative that we're for. It's about trying to do justice to the multifold struggles that exist in any one of our communities. Covering those issues with dignity, with sensitivity, without being condescending, considering them to be shared struggles. There's a real clash of visions here, a clash of visions whether you're a social justice organizer or whether you're a community media activist, and as I said, if you're one or the other, you're both. A clash of vision which really rejects the prevailing power systems in our society right now, which sees human beings simply as capital, that sees ecosystems as simply resources to be exploited, that sees culture as a commodity. You know, a vision of the world that I like to describe as looking like Disney, smelling like looking like Disney, tasting like Coke, and smelling like shit. That clash of visions is also shared in the media realm, rejecting the values of competition or greed or superficiality, and rather, you know, engaging in advocacy journalism that covers these issues with sensitivity and dignity. And again, I refer to the premise of a lot of the organizing that I've been involved with, which is that you can be radical and you can be effective. You can be militant, you can be creative. I think those similar premises exist in community media and community radio and alternative journalism. That you can be alternative and independent and still engage in good, solid journalism. That you can be radical and you can still be factual and informed and effective. I think indie media or alternative media is exactly that, the practice of journalism. And sometimes it can be sloppy, and sometimes people are lazy, and we could use a lot more resources. But then again, compared to the laziness and sloppiness of CNN or CanWest Global, we're doing pretty good. And actually, when you consider the resources that they have behind them, their sloppiness and their laziness is simply criminal. So let me finish off here. I said I'd be short. When I talked about that vision, I guess one part of that vision is understanding the impossibility of neutrality. You know, that's a pretense that a lot of journalists, these mainstream journalists, try to hide behind, this pretense of neutrality. Well, if you look at the world and you realize there's these really profound social struggles of the oppressed against oppressors, you can't be neutral. As many people have observed, to be neutral in that situation is to take the side of oppression. I want to quote an Israeli dissident journalist who writes for Haaretz, a woman by the name of Amira Haas. She writes for an Israeli paper who says, for her, journalism is about monitoring the sources of power. This isn't a trade-off, you know. You can engage in solid journalism and understand that, you know, you can't be neutral, that there's sides to be taken here, but you can still practice solid journalism by giving dignity to these community struggles. And I guess the final point I want to make here, and this is something that lurks behind all those examples I gave, like the struggle at Grassy Narrows, or the International Solidarity Movement, or Radio Libertad, that project I described that's emerging in Guerrero. This is all about the practice of real solidarity, of direct solidarity in our communities and communities beyond, insofar as we can offer that solidarity. Solidarity not meaning that we're here to help people, or we're here to condescend to people, or like feel sorry for people, and as people who feel sorry for them will cover their issues. Not at all. Rather, understanding solidarity meaning that our struggles are bound up in other people's struggles. Our freedom is bound up in other people's freedom. And no one is free until we're all free. I think that's the premise that lurks behind social justice organizing for centuries. I think that's the premise that lurks behind good alternative community radio and community journalism, and we should act accordingly. Thank you.
It has to start somewhere. It has to start sometime. What better place than here? What better time than now?
Presidential hopeful Dennis Kucinich gave a rousing talk to a packed office building in Portland, Oregon yesterday afternoon. Here is a segment of that talk, courtesy of IMC Portland.
Here's what I envision for America. A 15% reduction in the Pentagon budget will enable us to free up $60 billion. And here's what I want to do with that money. That money will enable us to, for the first time, create universal free kindergarten, daycare for all children ages 3, 4, and 5, to give every one of our children a chance for the earliest start, for the best education, for reading skills, for social skills, to help those parents who are struggling with the cost of daycare, and to give our nation a chance to redefine who we are as a nation. To challenge this Pentagon budget are simply contributing to a climate where we can expect more war, because what else is a rising Pentagon budget predicated upon except war?
Amen.
My administration will lead America in a new direction where we work with the world community on matters of security, where we work with the community in a common aspiration to be able to express our evolutionary potential, to come to the point of where we work with the nations of the world to make war itself archaic. It is coming. We must believe in our capacity to evolve. Because if we fail to believe in that capacity, we shall not evolve, and instead we shall find ourselves in endless conflicts with numerous nations, which lead only to the deaths of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. We are at a moment in human history where we have the opportunity to consciously choose between war and peace, between poverty and prosperity. We are at a moment in human history where we can take the fire in our hearts, the power of our spirit, to change this nation, to change this world, and create for ourselves a world of peace that we would be proud to turn over to our children. This must be. As the next president of the United States, I intend to lead this country in a direction which will help America realize the human needs of our country. We must recognize that there are millions of young Americans at this very moment who are threatened with the loss of their opportunity for a college education.
Yeah.
Cuts in state budgets, rapidly increased cost of education, are taking out of the reach of millions of Americans the opportunity to be able to lift themselves up Education is fundamental in a democratic society. Education is fundamental to social mobility. Education is fundamental to an enlightenment which will help America lead the world on a new path towards peace. As the next president of the United States, I intend to cancel the Bush tax cut and to put that money in. And let me help and do the math here. There are 12 million young Americans who attend colleges and universities that are run by the government, public colleges and universities, paying an average of $4,000 a year for tuition. That equals $48 billion a year. The tax cuts equal $1.55 trillion over 10 years, which averages out to $155 billion a year for the tax cuts. With just a third of those tax, the money from the tax cuts, only a third, we could put that money into a fund which would create universal college education. Yeah! And finally, there are 41 million Americans without health insurance. The economy in this area has demonstrated a continued lagging. The unemployment rate in Oregon is now approaching, I believe, 8.8%. The high degree of unemployment is leading more and more people to be without health insurance after their COBRA benefits run out. Right. We realize that more and more Americans who are working are finding the cost of health care being outside their means, with increased premiums, increased co-pays, increased deductibles, with insurance companies' profits going up, with pharmaceutical companies' profits going up. We have learned that this healthcare system is not owned by us, that it owns us, and we're going to change that with universal healthcare. This then becomes one of the great causes of our nation. A great cause where we heal our nation, a great cause where we take the resources we are already using in our nation, $1.4 trillion a year, 14% of our gross domestic product, to take these resources and to put them into a Medicare for all, universal health care system, which will provide for all medically necessary conditions, which will provide preventive health care, complementary and alternative medicine, which will provide for dental health, for mental health, which will provide a prescription drug benefit. We can have universal health care right now for what we're paying right now, but not getting right now.
Yeah.
We can have universal health care. My administration will lead the way to taking the private sector out of health care,
yes,
for putting the public interest in the And so, my friends of Portland, Oregon, and surrounding counties, I want to tell you, this election is about our capacity. It is about our capacity to transform ourselves and the nation, to reclaim for ourselves a dream of a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. This election is about our ability to help this country evolve, our ability to help put America on the path to peace, our ability to help change the priorities of this nation, our ability to reclaim an America that we know in our hearts can be so much better than it is, an America that we know in our hearts has the potential to lift up this country and the world, an America that we know in our hearts will become the America of our dreams, because we will make it happen. Thank you very much.
That wraps up IMC Radio News for this week. The coordination of the UCIMC Radio News is funded by the Funding Exchange's Paul Robeson Fund for Independent Media If you'd like to get involved with this show, drop us a line at radio@ucimc.org or call 344-8820 extension 1. No experience is necessary. You can also stop by the Radio News meeting, which is starting in 5 minutes at the IMC, 218 West Main Street in downtown Urbana. Don't worry, meetings always start late. You won't miss anything, and we'll wait for you. Archives of this program are available at the IMC website, www.ucimc.org. Take care and see you next week.